Season 2 is going to be great, right?
What?
Season 2, it's going to be great, oh, right?
Yes, it is. Can we try that again? I thought you said bees and chew.
Yes.
Also, these children are screaming. Can you hear them?
I could, yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be like around here when I have teenagers.
Then they will just stay in their rooms. That is the beauty of teenagers.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of awesome.
You are listening to Badass, Tales of Resilience, a podcast where we hold authentic conversations about trauma and how we navigate it. We hope to cultivate connection and compassion through the sharing of these very human experiences. I am your host, Maribai Rose. Welcome to Badass. Hello, listeners. Today, we are doing something a little different and really fun. We are going to introduce you to Season 2 of Badass Tales of Resilience. Woo-hoo! And I have a co-host today, a co-host who I have known since the moment that she entered the world. Yes, my bestie, who I've known for 45 years.
46?
Yep, soon to be 46. She is a wonderful human, and her name is Claire Wildhack Nolan. She is the director of equity learning at the Peace Learning Center in Indianapolis, Indiana. She's mama to the beautiful Esme, and she and her partner Bobby live in Rocky Ripple in Indy. And I am so happy that you're here with me, Claire, because of all the people that I could think of who would just get really excited about the cool stuff that we're doing, I knew you would.
I am. I'm like constantly cheering back here for
yes.
you and Badass and all the people on it. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
To watch it grow and hear all the amazing stories.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you've done so much work around equity and social justice. I feel like, you know, you really get the whole, like, diving deep into the hard stuff.
Thanks. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm committed and do it well some of the time and awesome others. And it's always a journey.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what is so interesting about having you as well is that you personally know some of our guests. One of the earlier episodes that we're going to air, the one that will air after this one, Mary Sexton. She is an incredible poet, and she's written a book of poetry about her daughter's addiction. But I actually met Mary through you. I met Mary through your mom when we were just little girls. We started going to Mary Sexton's New Year's Eve party every year.
Yes.
Yeah. Great New Year's Eve party, by the way.
Great New Year's party.
Oh, yep. My God.
She's an auntie. Definite auntie.
Yeah. When you're raised by hippies, you get to dance at parties. That's so fun.
And the kids get to stay up as late as the adults.
Yes.
Pretty great.
Yes. So you and Mary Sexton actually go way back. But, you know, in this context, as an adult, hearing her poems, knowing her personally, knowing her daughter Sarah personally, I freaking loved this interview. I loved doing this interview with her. Her poetry is just incredible. And we're going to play a clip of her talking about her process in writing the book and about this book really being a way for her to channel her own feelings and have her own process about her daughter's addiction. So here's the clip.
I wrote my way through grief and shame and anger and doubt and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the story. And it's my fear, and it was my anger, and it was my doubts that came out on the paper.
Yeah.
And so I have to be responsible for it and own it for what it is.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to hear that. I'm so excited to hear it just from the perspective of also just knowing being a mom now, as well as like Mary being my auntie and Sarah being my cousin, friend, just thinking about being a mom. And I've spent some time in Al-Anon too, and in rooms with lots of parents, kind of processing their own relationship to addiction and their children. And I'm excited for her and for Sarah that they were able to, that Mary was able to do this, and with the blessing and love of her child too in their, in her own process. And yeah, I can't wait to hear her thoughts about that.
Yeah. I felt like her writing process was such a great way of untangling the, like, what is mine and what is yours. Because that is so hard with addiction. And I think, you know, we oftentimes have this instinct to take on too much or maybe too little. And so I loved the way that she was really able to carve out the stuff that was hers and claim that.
So cool. And it can be so enmeshed. I can imagine being able to speak to your spirit and your heart through poetry around that enmeshness. And like you're saying, sorting that out. I love that poetry was the medium for her to be able to do that. And I can't imagine a more vulnerable way and topic to connect to around that, you know?
Yeah. Me too. And it was so interesting this season because I feel like we had some guests that weren't people who kind of naturally trended towards vulnerability. We had this guest, Lindsay Bradley, who is a nurse practitioner. And I could tell that she was somebody who, you know, was a real amazing, like, linear thinker, so smart, so organized, you know. But she was thrust into a highly emotional work experience when she was the nurse practitioner on the ICU unit during COVID.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Right? Like, you know, just how do you not experience a certain level of vulnerability with that. And it was really cool to talk with her about that experience and what that was like for her as she navigated that. So now we're going to listen to a clip of Lindsay Bradley talking about that time.
And I just, you know, I remember multiple times working, you know, 12, 14, 15, 20 days, not 20, probably 15 was the max, day stretches of 12-hour days.
Wow.
And just going home and falling into bed and then just getting up and doing the same thing the next day, you know. And I'm talking days in a row. You don't have weekends off. You don't have, because there's not enough bodies to take care of all these people. And there were only a handful of ICU doctors at that time, and still, for that matter, because we're just not that big of a system, right? So you can't afford to hire that many doctors and NPs for a 16-bed ICU.
Yeah, so that was wild to hear.
Wow, my skin, like, literally crawled hearing her say how much she worked.
I know.
In that kind of condition.
12-hour days.
Oh, my God. For up to 15 in a row?
Yeah.
It's just like, how can that, that alone is so much to put any human through, let alone when the also responsibility of your choices, decisions, and emotions in that moment are life and death.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It really is. It really is. And just the level of kind of desperation that, you know, the hospital was experiencing, because there were, I mean, she goes on to describe just what it was like. I mean, there were so many deaths in the beginning of COVID and so many, like, just crisis moments on the unit where multiple people were coding at the same time. They only have so many hands and they're trying to figure out whose room to go into, and they have to put on all that protective gear. I was just floored that any of them kind of, like, made it out of that with their sanity.
Well, I feel like the medical field, you know, maybe whether you're drawn to it because of the science, but I think there are a lot of people who are also drawn to it because of the caring aspect and because they've been cared for by medicine in different ways. And so I feel like the medical world a lot of times pulls people who it's like a calling for them, mm-hmm. not just a job. And there must be something that happens when people are in those states that keep them going to provide that. And a lot of people, I mean, I think this is important for me to hear because right now I feel so detached from that time in a way. And I was detached from that hospital experience. So to remember what happened just a couple of years ago is so important. And I also know that so much of that fallout, like she said, that they still don't have many workers. You know, mm-hmm. I know I've been back in schools for the first time since COVID because for a couple of years in my work, we weren't even allowed to go into school buildings as community partners. And there's still this like large toll that's going on. So I think to remember the beginning like impact that people really were dying a lot and in the hospitals, because now I feel like sometimes there's a narrative that like it wasn't that big a deal. Why'd they make us go through all that? So I think, I don't know if you feel like you hear that narrative out there, but I think this one will be really important for me to listen to like to not forget what certain individuals, especially on the, you know, the front lines of that were going through and now still are going through in a lot of those spaces.
Yeah. And I think in our culture, we so often just expect people to move on from things very quickly, very, very quickly.
That's trauma.
Yeah. But my gosh, I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of healthcare workers out there who've just been through this thing. And I hope some of those healthcare workers can hear this interview because I feel like it's just really important to give a voice to somebody who really had one of the most visceral experiences of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm so glad that's going to be featured. Yeah. I'm glad she was ready. To tell that story, because I think that is trauma for so many people who went through that. And it is a very isolated experience compared to some people and how we're acting now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just, gosh, I just have so much gratitude for of the nurses and nurse practitioners and doctors who were able to hang in there. Like, I mean, wow. That's incredible.
It is. So grateful.
And our next guest that we're going to talk about is somebody who you know. You actually, again, like, dude, you're like my connection. You introduced me to her, too. You're the badass connect.
Wire. Energetic copper wire.
But yeah, you had introduced me to Dr. Maria Hamilton Abagunde. When you had participated in the Sister Song art show in Indianapolis, and I really was struck by her presence and her energy just in that short meeting. And so we ended up reconnecting in Bloomington, and I had her onto the podcast, and she read this incredible essay that she wrote about having an abortion. I believe she was 15 at the time when she had this abortion. And sadly, her pregnancy was a product of rape. And this had been something she had experienced again and again in her early adolescence. And so, it felt so important to have her on to talk about, how sometimes, abortion is necessary for various reasons. But with her, there was a real sense of taking back some power over her body with this. And she, she just really powerfully illuminated that sense of like her agency had been stripped and she was making this choice about her body. And that was so important. So I wanted to play a clip of her reading a part of the essay, because she read the essay in almost its entirety on the program.
What you should be asking me is this, daughter. You are how old? Daughter, who raped you? Was there more than one? For how long they force you to do this? What happened when you told someone? How come no one come see? How long this was happening? Daughter, how come no one believe you? Daughter, can we hold you? Tell you how sorry we are, how ashamed we are that we abandoned you? Daughter, can we tell you that we love you, that we believe you now?
Yeah.
She is such a powerful, amazing woman. Her poetry was featured in the art show where you met her with me. And so it's so powerful to hear her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the power of her voice, the power of her presence, her art in all these different forms, her spiritual practice plays a really important role. And the anti-racism community I'm a part of that I met her through here in Indianapolis. And just to hear her speak this essay and speak to a really essential, powerful question and moment in her life is so huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt really strongly about the decision to have her read the essay, even though it was a little bit of a departure from what we normally do on the show. But there was just, there was something about her voice. I just needed to hear it in her voice. And I was so moved by the essay, and I just thought it would be amazing to be able to share this with people. And
mm-hmm.
I hope that it does help people think more broadly about, a number of things, about, the work we still have to do on sexual violence, about, abortion and access to abortion. And
Well, so many things are being that she's addressing just in that experience. I've been in some some conversations where I've just realized once again and just remembered through hearing friends' stories of how many women have gone through sexual violence and sexual assault. And still, and now what we're dealing with, our bodies and making abortion illegal, just the ongoing struggle this continues to still be, and how so much of it has been silenced because of sexism, and violence, and how it's been made silent and taboo to speak of. And I think that's something that's always so powerful is when, women find a space and a voice to share it, or when not even just women, but what men speak up about it, or, anyone chooses to make the time, whether they were the person who that act was perpetrated against or not, to speak up against violence towards women. And I feel like it makes sense that you want to give space for that person to tell their whole story in their voice, because that is powerful. And I'm hearing so much of, this just theme through your season too, of this power of writing.
Yes.
And narrative. And I know that's what you're trying to do with the whole podcast in a lot of ways, but that you have other people who have really work on healing themselves and healing others in their situations through the written word, is a really cool theme I'm seeing emerge this season too. That's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the work we did on season one was great. I'm really proud that we were able to invite folks into these very intimate experiences. And I do hope that when people listen, if they've had similar experiences, it gives them some kind of way to connect with another person who has. And I also understand that sometimes looking at or talking about something so directly and head on can be a lot for people. And so in this season, I wanted to still be telling powerful stories because I do think powerful stories make a difference. And I do think that people will think differently about an issue if there's a powerful story that's wrapped around it. But I also get that, you know, telling a tale of something really intense that's happened to somebody in great detail can be a lot for people. So I intentionally did invite people who had written about their experience and who had kind of looked at it through a particular lens. And there are a lot of our episodes that have, you know, just a very small amount of description of actual, you know, traumatic events and more a larger, you know, creative exploration of what that meant. And so it's, it's, this season's going to be a little different. We do still have a few first person stories. There were a few things that I felt like that narrative could be really powerful around. One of those things was death due to overdose, because as a therapist, I've had several clients that have lost their partners to overdose. And they all say it's really hard to talk about because there's still so much stigma around it. And people make assumptions about my partner. They make assumptions about who they were when they hear that they died by overdose. And so I really wanted to present a story about overdose that really humanized the person who had died and also really gave voice to the family and what their experience is, so that should someone listen to it and then see a person in the world who's lost someone to overdose, that they might better understand what that person has been going through. So our next clip is actually from that story with Lindsay Maxwell, whose husband Josh had died by overdose.
And with each day, I did feel stronger and more independent. And I felt like after he died, I wanted to do something about this shitty situation.
Yeah. So she feels really strongly about naming how he died. And that's something that we had talked about, you know, that not everybody feels like they even want to say that because of the stigma. But she does. And so I feel glad to give her that opportunity to really tell his story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about just that feeling of aloneness kind of. So hearing her story, I don't know. I just think about people in my own life who, even if they wouldn't want to share their story, to hear other people, to not feel alone, and for us to remember how many people are experiencing this kind of grief every day, you know?
Yeah. And when we talk about kind of that, like, you know, what is ours, what is theirs, you know, this is an interesting story because Josh was somebody who had a really happy family. Like, he came from a happy, healthy family of origin, and he and Lindsay had three children, and she was pregnant with her fourth child when he died, and they were really happy together. They really loved each other. They loved being parents. He was a good dad. So I also like that this story sort of challenges this narrative about, you know, who is struggling with addiction, because there are a lot of people who are struggling with addiction that don't meet any particular stereotype.
Yeah, it really is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something in, like, you know, AA and Al-Anon circles that you hear a lot, but maybe isn't talked about in larger narratives very often, is that, like, you're really struggling against the disease. And that's something that I forget sometimes too. And it sounds like the story could be a good reminder of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So something that has been pretty exciting for me about this season is we've actually been able to work with a couple of thinkers and writers who are working at a national level to kind of bring their message and their teachings to the world. And one of those is Jill Bolte Taylor. And what was so interesting about that interview is, you know, she had let us know when we were communicating back and forth that she'd done 250 podcast interviews last year.
Wow. That is
that's so many.
She needs some lozenges.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Send her some lozenges. But the majority of those have been directly related to her work. She wrote a book called Whole Brain Living that's been very popular. It's a great book. And so she's done all these interviews about whole brain living, but she actually agreed to come on the show and talk with us about her very personal experience of having a brother with schizophrenia. And that was, okay. She's publicly acknowledged that it's in both of her books, but it was sort of her catalyst for studying the brain, because she's a brain researcher. And I was just so odd that she was willing to come to my wee little podcast.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and talk about something that was so vulnerable and so personal. And it was just interesting because we actually do have such shared experience, because she's lived in Bloomington with her schizophrenic brother, actively trying to be part of taking care of him. And I've lived in Bloomington with my ex-husband, actively trying to take care of him when he was experiencing psychosis. And so, it's like just so interesting how this person is, you know, feels so far away from, you know, me and where I'm at in life, like that we actually could really connect in on this thing. And I'm still a little bit in shock. I actually interviewed her just today, so I'm still a little bit in shock that happened.
Cool. I love it that she said yes, and that you got to have that conversation with her, and that she's like still exploring herself and connecting with people, you know, who are making local podcasts.
Yes.
So cool.
Yes. Absolutely.
Was it inspiring?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was. And it was really, it was interesting to hear, like, she just, like, throw in these tidbits about the brain, right? And about, you know, brain cells and things that I had no, I mean, I'm a therapist and I think I'm fairly intelligent. But, you know, like,
you are, girl. You
this,
are.
Like, brain science level is different. So it was cool to, because it was like a conversation that I've had, you know, I've talked a lot since my ex-husband became psychotic about, you know, the structure of the mental health care system not working for people, and, you know, the challenges of living with somebody in that state. But to actually like get to have that conversation with somebody who knew tidbits about what is happening in the brain was really cool. Mm-hmm. That was really cool and kind of a different angle for me. So I feel like we sort of both got to come at this podcast like from a different angle for both of ourselves.
So cool. And I, going back to my theme, I'm creating. It's okay. But in terms of authorship and writing too, to process different things and thinking about kind of how you talked about with your earlier interviews, like the ebb and flow of like people who are more vulnerable emotional artistic connection to their processes, and then more science-based and maybe linear thinking. And then here she is kind of bringing a lot of that together. She is an author, she's a scientist, she's a caretaker, and she's had these like personal experiences. So it's interesting because I'm always trying to find connections with stuff, and to me, like, she kind of brings a lot of the things that that sound like they came up in earlier interviews into her own experience interview, like kind of continuing those themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And she is a badass. I forgot to say it in the interview to her, but she really is like the way she went so deep into trying to solve this problem. Like she went and she studied brains of schizophrenics, you know, like that's some tenacity, like that's some commitment to get, you know, to get your PhD because you see this problem and you're like, I want to solve it. Like that's some badassery right there.
That is, it is science badassery. One of my favorite kinds. Or care and love. It's like the whole thing. That's so cool.
Yeah, we need it all.
I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one. And then another badass who's very smart and also very caring and compassionate is my colleague Heather Maritano. She came on the show to talk with us about this idea of being a wounded healer, that we come to the art of healing, of therapy, or as she calls being with, from a place where we have our own wounds that we're carrying, that we're dealing with. And so she was really willing to get vulnerable with us and talk to us about her own childhood and some of the things that had happened in her childhood. So I'm going to play you a clip that'll give you a good idea of what she was contending with.
When I think back about my childhood, fear is not the primary emotion that I associate. What I most associate is really loneliness and grief.
Mm.
I certainly have trepidation about my mother's depression and rage. It honed my vigilance to really read the energy of what's happening, kind of like an animal can sense danger.
Yes.
My mother's moods were pretty terrifying at both ends of the spectrum of depression and rage. Tummy aches were definitely a somatic part of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of what I now know to be called shame.
Mm-hmm.
Shame that really came out of poverty.
Yes.
And out of not belonging. So I think loneliness, not belonging, that informs me more really than fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a really moving interview because she, you know, she mm-hmm. really had a, like, lonely. That was actually such a good word now that I think about the totality of what she shared with us. So she had a mother that just, you know, wasn't mature enough, wasn't stable enough to be the parent. And so, you know, she was really the parent and didn't have anybody who was there to, you know, there nobody in the role of like, I'm going to take care of you. And yet she grew up to be this amazing therapist. I mean, she's really remarkable. She's got a true gift for therapy and she's so compassionate and just so intelligent, just such an all around great human being. And I kind of love the story because, you know, I think sometimes, again, like there's some stereotypes when you're raised with abuse and neglect, like what that's going to mean for you as a person. But there are a lot of just really wonderful people who were raised with abuse and neglect. And not that it doesn't leave its marks, but I think that was really a cool interview because just getting to sort of share with the world someone who was able to do some transcending and do that through healing others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That had to be inspiring too, just getting to connect with like your community on that level.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did have some fun just moments where we were kind of exchanging some ideas about therapy itself, which is always really fun for me. I'm such a therapy nerd. I love talking about it.
Totally. Nerds are the best.
Yes. Yes. I know.
The curiosity. I mean, that's the thing, is like the curiosity for life, plus like the caring for life, makes a great combination for self and healing of others. You know, it's mm-hmm. like what, without the shame and the judgment, like how can we understand things and heal them? Because, you know, we're talking about societal issues or our own personal issues and how those connect with each other. I think more and more about it being harms that need healing and repair, you know? And
yeah. So
that the empathy to be able to do that work, because it is hard work, really makes sense to me. And the trust you could build with people because you understand and have gone through hard things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, and that was an interesting, I think we talked about it. It's sometimes some of our conversations blur together because I've definitely talked to Heather outside of this interview as well. But yeah, I think we did touch on the kind of piece around like self-disclosure. And I think that you do have to be careful, you know, to maintain right. certain boundaries with self-disclosure. But it was so frowned upon for such a long time. And I find it to be a really important piece of therapy. Those moments where it's really appropriate to say, yeah, me too. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I resonate with.
It's about me, but I relate.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah, I really get where you're coming from. I really do. And, you know, I think that's so powerful. Like Heather calls it, it's being with. It's, you know, being with someone. And rather than kind of this, like, removed stance, I think it's a lot easier for people to feel judged in that dynamic.
Absolutely. Well, that is amazing. Are there more?
Yes.
I'm just so mind blown. Many different interviews of amazing people you've gotten to do.
Girl, it has been some work.
I know.
But yes, there are. I have just one more clip from an interview that we've already recorded, and then I'll tell you just a little bit about what might be coming down the pike.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I don't know if anybody's read much Tom Robbins.
I've read Tom Robbins.
He's a fun author. Right now, again, I can't remember which book it's in, but there's a section in this book of a young woman named Amanda, and Amanda's having this conversation with a priest, and he would bring up some value or moral that she should believe in, and she would dismiss it. And then he'd bring up another one, and she would dismiss it as not relevant to her life, or another one, and like, why should I believe that, you know, sort of thing. And exasperated, the priest finally goes, well, what do you believe in? And she says, let me see if I get this right. I believe in birth, death, and copulation. It was like 23 years ago I was born. Someday I shall die. And today I believe I will copulate. And then the next line that Robbins had written was, and indeed she did.
And believe it or not, this was a conversation we were having about death.
Awesome.
I know. No, that was Kel McBride. And she's written a book about death and dying and about how to prepare for it. I will have the name of her book on my website. I'm not going to try it now because my memory's not great and I know I'll just get it wrong. but she's released this book, and it's actually fascinating. She goes into a lot of really good information, like things that are good to think about well ahead of your death. But also, you know, she approaches it from a really lighthearted way. And as you can hear from the clip, she's very funny. I mean, she's just a funny, lighthearted, warm person. And so, you know, I think she makes talking about death as fun as you can make it.
I love it. I love that approach. I need that in my life. I feel like since becoming a parent, it's more fear around death have like struck me than ever in my life before.
Yeah.
And having a little kid ask you questions about it and your own mortality and be scared about it and obsess on it a little bit. It kind of helps in a way, because like talking to a little kid, you have to, I want to be honest, not just brush it under the rug, but you also, I think humor would help me a lot. So I'm excited to hear more about that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was a great interview. And I think just listening to the, you know, podcast interview itself would give people a ton of information. I mean, we went over a lot of stuff. But then, you know, if folks wanted to take it one step further and buy the book after they listen to the interview, I mean, I don't know. I'm a former hospice social worker, so like I'm just all about it. I'm like, yeah, get your preparation on.
Like, yeah, that's the hardest part, is we just don't know when.
Right. Yeah. It's a right? great inevitability in life. Like, we will all die. But yeah, feeling like
and
you
the
have...
the loved ones we have will die.
Yeah.
To me, that's the hardest part, really.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
Until I became a mom. Then it was my death that became hard. But I think that, yeah, that a lot of times... Once again, too, death, a pretty frequent taboo to really go in on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just diving in there, man. Just knocking them out one by one.
It definitely helps. I think it's a big plus. Just talk about the things we tell you not to talk about.
Yep. That might be like part of my ADHD. I'm like, oh, you don't want to talk about that? Okay, well, just you wait.
Whatever. I mean, we're pretty nice girls. It's good that there's stuff that we're not nice about.
You know, that is a good point.
They're taboo and crossing those boundaries, because otherwise, you know, we'd be too beige. So
yes.
It helps us add the yes. fuchsia in there.
Yes. So, yeah. So I do have a few more guests that I'll be interviewing, and still in the process of reaching out to some people. To see if I can entice them into being guests. But I do have something lined up with a historian from IU here at Bloomington, Dr. Amrita Myers. And I'm really excited to talk with her. Dr. Myers is a historian, and she studies the history of enslaved women. And so I'd really wanted to interview her because, you know, the theme of my podcast is resilience. And, you know, I feel like there's just this extraordinary level of resilience in that community. And I think that there are these ways in which the threads of the experience of slavery still absolutely impact us today. And so I thought that it would be pretty moving and meaningful to explore that with her and find out from her, you know, more about it, because it's honestly not something that I know a ton about. So I'm excited to do the research on that one, to learn more, to talk with her. And she's just an all around cool person, just somebody that I've kind of known peripherally for a while and really respect. So I'm really excited to get to sit down with her. And Dr. Jennifer Mullen, who has spearheaded the decolonizing therapy movement, has agreed to be on our podcast. And that is really exciting. I have been such a fan of hers for the last couple of years, just really looking at the power structure in mental health and how it is not serving people, and some of the things that we can do as providers of mental health and consumers of mental health to create a little bit more equity. And it's a really cool topic and something that feels near and dear to my heart as a mental health provider. So I just think she is awesome. And she's coming out with a book called Decolonizing Therapy, and that's going to be released in September. So if all goes well, we'll interview her in August and time the release of the podcast with the release of the book.
That's so great. And it's great that both of those are going to be there, because I feel like so much colonization and slavery are interwoven into our culture every day still today. And the traumas from them that hearing some folks who are looking at it from a historic perspective into now, and then decolonization in therapy, because all those aspects of like racism and white supremacy play out so much in every structure in our society that I love it that that's getting connected here through therapy and history and the history of trauma and how we carry that forward. So that needs so much time and energy, and I'm glad that's here.
That's
here.
Yeah, it feels really important to me because it's a space in which we ask people to be so vulnerable and to not be attentive to those dynamics around oppression or to actively do things to reinforce them. Like that feels to me just like extra wrong.
I'm excited to listen. I'm already just going off in my head thinking and wondering and reflecting. I'm excited to learn more.
Yeah. Yeah. Aw. So season 2 is going to be awesome.
It sounds extremely amazing, definitely badass, and also just potentially transformational, I feel like. The speakers or the interviews that you did, the work they're producing and putting out into the world, it just sounds like an intensely amazing series. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, intensely amazing. I might have to use that as like a tagline for the podcast. Badass. It's intensely amazing.
That's right. The ripple effects of what is going to come out of this, I feel like, are huge, just because if you're connecting this many people, whoever listens to this many people who are doing powerful healing work on so many different layers through so many different formats. And most of them have written books that then you can go and continue to learn from.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good arc.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. Well,
congratulations.
Thank you. Well,
you can come out of Indiana. I doubt it frequently, but you prove wrong, Mirabai. You're a badass. Thank you for giving me hope for Hoosiers. Oh, I need it right now.
I'll be in.
I know a lot of these people are Hoosiers too.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel better too.
Oh,
I love you.
I love you.
Aww. I'm super proud of all this good work you're doing. Aww. And all these other folks you're introducing to me. I appreciate it. I'm glad I could introduce some to you, and now I get reintroduced to them.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. Aw. Okay, darling. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. And I love you so much. I hope to see you soon.
I love you too. Bye.
Bye. Good listening, everybody.
Badass Tales of Resilience is produced and hosted by Mirabai Rose and engineered and edited by Kevin Evans. Opening and closing sequence music courtesy of Austin Lucas and Last Chance Records. Other original music by Alex Mann. If you've enjoyed this episode of Badass, please subscribe to the podcast and check the show notes for links to our Facebook and Instagram pages where you can leave comments and be sure to like and follow us. You can also check out the podcast's webpage at mirabairose.com where we have a lot more info on our guests, links to their work, and news about what we're up to. Mirabai's book, Holding Hope, One Family's Odyssey Through Lyme Disease and Psychosis, is now available on Amazon and available to order through your local bookstore. Most importantly, thank you for listening and connecting with us.